uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Good to be back. Well, I was here yesterday as well, so doing our program live on the 4th of July, today the 5th of July. Lots in the news. I wrote up a piece over the weekend, an op-ed piece, and sent it off to Common Dreams. We'll see if they run it. It's about my concern that Alberto Gonzalez may be the guy that George W. Bush is going to nominate. In fact, the specific scenario, which is not that hard to figure out. I mean, BuzzFlash has it as their headline this morning, is here it is. You get the religious conservatives to attack Gonzalez, saying the guy's not extremist enough. We don't like him. He's not enough of an extremist. We want more extremism. And then you roll him out, say, hey, here he is. He's a moderate, and he looks like a moderate in the press. And the press says, oh, yes, George Bush, he's nominated a moderate, Alberto Gonzalez, the guy who says torture's okay. We don't have to respect the Hague Convention. We don't have to respect the International Treaty on Torture. We don't have to respect the Geneva Conventions. We don't have to respect our own laws. We can ignore and make fun of the provisions in the Declaration of Independence itself. What we celebrated yesterday, as you will recall, you know, what did the founders, or some of the founders' concerns? Why did we separate from England? For example, for depriving us of the benefits of trial by jury. Can you spell Jose Padilla? Yes, I know it sounds Padilla, but he likes it pronounced Padilla. Jose Padilla. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretend offenses. I mean, this is in the Declaration of Independence. So, I have some concerns about that. By the way, our website, TomHartman.com, our chat room is up and running. If you want to click live chat, it'll get you there. It was down for a little while earlier this morning. It is up again. www.TomHartman.com. Click live chat. And, of course, the telephone number for the program is toll-free across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. So, my point with all this is that everybody is focusing on abortion. And I think it's a fine thing to focus on abortion. Abortion's an important issue. But the reality is, even in a worst case scenario, and again, please keep in mind, and I know my saying this is probably going to send some of the folks in the pro-choice movement off the edge, but hear me out, please, because I think this will make sense to you. Even in a worst case situation, if the Supreme Court were to say, we're going to repeal Roe v. Wade. It's up to the states to decide whether or not they want to have abortion illegal. Or for that matter, the federal government can legislate that abortion is illegal, even in the first trimester. Or even if they were to repeal Cunningham versus the state of Connecticut, 1964, and say even birth control can be rendered illegal. Then you would have legislatures that would have to pass those laws. And I just don't see it happening. I see that as being, it may happen in some places, and that would be a terrible thing. It would be a disaster. But the bigger disaster, a much worse disaster, would be if we lose even our right to protest something like that happening. And that's the path, the fascistic path, that this administration is walking down. That's what Alberto Gonzalez is all about. You don't like protesters showing up at your speeches? You're the president of the United States. You're supposed to be everybody's president, right? Yesterday, George Bush shows up in West Virginia. He gives a speech. Some folks showed up. They wanted to protest his speech. What do? They herd them down the street with guns and bayonets and stick them in a cage called a free speech zone. Now, the last I looked, that's not free speech. In fact, the last time I looked, the Constitution of the United States, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. But Alberto Gonzalez, you can ignore that, George. We can have free speech zones. Put people in cages if they don't like us. Yes, George was speaking on your and my nickel. Our tax dollars paid for that, but we're not allowed to speak up at it. I'm telling you, this is a road that if we go down, then losing the right to abortion is going to be the one of the smallest things that we'll worry about. Because we will not have the means to get back the right to abortion because we will have lost our ability to speak out in public. This is an administration that would say, if somebody is against the administration, you know, you're either with us or against us, right? You're either evil or you're good. Remember George Bush? I mean, this is an administration where Bush would say,
either with us or against us, you're either evil or you're good.
And use that to take to disappear people. I am convinced, I realize this is like pushing the envelope, and I let me acknowledge that right up front. I'm not trying to do the George Norrie show or Art Bell or anything like that. But just look at what's happened. This administration has disappeared people. They've disappeared two American citizens. And if it weren't for civil rights activists, we wouldn't know about it. And if the administration had decided that they didn't have the right to speak, we still wouldn't know about it. And there may be more. Because when you ask the administration, are there other people that you've disappeared, other U.S. citizens that you've disappeared, they say, well, you don't have the right to know that. They don't say no. So that information is classified. How many American citizens have disappeared? And so my concern, and I have to just say this, my concern is that if we end up with Alberto Gonzalez on the Supreme Court, or someone like him, we're not just going to lose potentially the right to abortion. We could lose everything that it is to be American. We could lose our connection with all of our traditions, because clearly this guy has no connection to them. Anybody who would say the Geneva Convention is quaint, anybody who would say that our own laws forbidding torture can be ignored, that torture is defined as organ failure, you know, behavior leading to organ failure or death, then you're torturing somebody. Say, wait a minute. And so I just have to say I'm quite concerned about that. And now, George Bush, yesterday, this USA Today reported this. This from the Associated Press. President Bush on Monday defended Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who is the target of conservative critics seeking a hardliner for the Supreme Court, USA Today reported. As if he weren't a hardliner. See, he's just not a hardliner on abortion. I mean, he may be actually a hardliner on abortion. The guy's Catholic. He may go along with Scalia, who's an Opus Dei. We don't know. Nobody knows. And because he's never spoken out on this, the hardline anti-abortion folks are all flipped out, right? But here you have USA Today and the Associated Press coming out and saying that Gonzalez is not a hardliner. The guy who says it's okay to throw people in jail without access to an attorney. It's okay to throw people in jail without letting them make that one phone call. It's okay to throw people in jail without telling them that they have the right to an attorney to defend. It's okay to throw people in jail without ever giving them a hearing in a court before a judge. It's okay to throw people in jail without having the right to make bail. I mean, this is what, the 6th, 7th, 8th Amendment of the Constitution. That you have the right to a trial by a jury of your peers, a speedy trial, and you have the right to make bail. And you're telling me Alberto Gonzalez is not a hardliner? Oh, it's just fine. We can ignore that pesky Constitution. I'm telling you, The right to abortion is it is a big issue. It is a big issue. But the loss of democracy in the United States, frankly, in my mind, is a bigger issue. Because it will inhale the right to abortion. Of course, Hitler made abortion illegal in Germany. Of course. And who wanted to protest it? Do you ever see any protests of it? Or of anything else? Because the protesters disappeared. They ended up in detention camps, like we operate in Guantanamo Bay. So again, look at the language in this Associated Press story. The first sentence, this story that appeared in newspapers all over the United States today or tomorrow will in some papers. President Bush on Monday defended Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who is the target of conservative critics seeking a hardliner for the Supreme Court, USA Today reported. Gonzalez is being positioned as the middle guy. Well, he may be the middle guy on abortion. We don't know. He might be a hardliner on abortion. But I'll tell you, he's not the middle guy on civil liberties. He's not the middle guy on what it means to be America. They go on to say the president said he will interview prospects himself after he sorts through candidates over the next few weeks to replace Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. The newspaper said in a story posted late Monday on its website, Bush told USA Today, quote, Al Gonzalez is a great friend of mine. When a friend of mine gets attacked, I don't like it. End quote. The president appealed to special interest groups running ads and mobilizing supporters, this is from the AP story, for the anticipated fight over the Supreme Court nominee to, quote, tone down the heated rhetoric, end quote. They add some congressional Republicans are cautioning against Gonzalez, a close friend of Bush, whom they believe isn't steadfastly conservative on issues like affirmative action and abortion. Asked whether women and minorities are on his list, Bush said he is reviewing, quote, a diverse group of citizens, end quote. This is a bigger issue than just diversity. This could be the end of the United States as we know it. And then on top of that, as if that weren't enough, we have Karl Rove's lawyer, Robert Luskin. Karl Rove, you know, another guy who doesn't believe in the American way, who doesn't believe in democracy in the United States, Karl Rove, who believes that if you tell lies to people and you're in politics, that's fine as long as the ends justify the means. Yeah, you could find a bug in your own office and claim that it's the other guy. Dirty tricks to win campaigns, that's fine. All's fair in love, war, and politics, right? I didn't think so. Karl Rove clearly does. Karl Rove's lawyer, Robert Luskin, some interesting things to say to us. I'll share those with you right after this. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 20 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMD you promised on TV, hey, admit it, you figured it wrong, so I'm taking my country back.
Yes, indeed. Time to take back the United States of America in a more patriotic week it couldn't be. Time to take it back from the neocons and wackos who are holding us hostage. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, David in San Francisco, California, on the line. Hey, David, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. You know, that was a good little song as a lead-in there. I've been thinking for some years that the way to take the take the issue back of who owns America and take the issue back of who controls America directly to a kind of an activism of if we're going to end up with a whole lot of unemployed people. There was an old tradition from the very start of this country that people would go down to the county courthouse and they would sit in on the trials. They would, of course, we have in the Bill of Rights the right to a public trial, and we'd be able to pay attention to these judges. And as such, then we wouldn't end up with these crazy neocon judges getting further and further elevated.
Well, David, that presupposed an era, which was much of America's history, where one person working could support a family.
Oh, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, working a 40-hour week, where the working person had you know, a little spare time and usually had a spouse who had a lot of spare time or some spare time, and then you could do that. Increasingly, what I'm seeing is that the Bush administration and the cons in general, I mean, this started with Reagan, the cons in general are trying to put us into a situation where we're working 2 and 3 jobs, we're working 15-hour days, you know, 60, 70, 80-hour weeks, and we don't have the time to be civically participatory. We don't have the time to participate in civics and politics, and therefore they don't have to worry about us.
Well, to some degrees that's true, but you know, in the agricultural world of the 1800s, the 8-hour day was a real anomaly. Most people put in about a 16-hour day. So, you know, whether it was your retired grandpa that went up there or somebody else who then sat in the town square and gave everybody information about what happened during the day, either way, the second angle of what we need to start doing is to start going through these public records of who's owning what. In other words, the more we learn about the billions of dollars that are being looted from Iraq and from the Homeland Security budget and from the black budgets that we've got.
Yeah, $8.5 billion now missing in Iraq.
Well,
missing.
At minimum.
A trillion missing in the Defense Department budget over the last 15 years or so. But,
oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But $8.5 billion, as you say, at a minimum, missing in Iraq.
Right.
Where is it?
Well, out here in San Francisco, we're seeing this crazy anomaly where housing prices keep shooting up and up and up, and there's no logic to it. Who has the money to buy this stuff when everybody's getting laid off?
Yeah.
So it's pretty obvious that this stolen money is going back into buying properties around America, and they're slowly but surely forcing everybody into eviction. Like, for example, the troops over in Iraq are getting, you know, the National Guardsmen aren't able to pay their mortgages, and they're getting evicted even while they're being trapped over in Iraq. It's very similar, actually, to what happened to the soldiers in World War I. They were not allowed to come back home even after the war was over, and their properties and farms were foreclosed while they were gone. And so they came back to find themselves homeless. So what we're ending up with is a lot of unemployed people that have got a lot of time on their hands. If they were to start going down to the county courthouse and start looking at these registries, see who's buying this stuff, find out if these match up with the people who are contributing to Bush, and then start seizing that property.
There you go. David, it's a beginning point, but this is not what... You know, I don't think that we need to be blaming the average person for not doing it. This is what reporters should be doing. I mean, this just as a beginning point. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We got to take a break here, but you raise a couple of interesting topics, like how come Silicon Valley is laying people off. We'll be right back.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Yeah, it's actually up on the Common Dreams website right now. Supreme Court Media Ignore Possible Fascist Play is the title. And this, you know, I think this is a legitimate concern, a big concern. And by the way, I put Tom DeLay in there. I meant Tom Daschle. So I just sent a note to the editor. Please fix my error. So no need to call and let me know what it is. But in any case, this I think is a really legitimate concern. And speaking of, you know, our jobs here over the weekend, the New York Times, July 3rd, an article by John Markoff and Matt Richel Things are looking up at Wise Technology, a venerable maker of computer terminals, unless, that is, you happen to work for the company here in Silicon Valley. Responding to booming demand in Asia and Europe, Wise is adding new development teams in India and China and expanding its worldwide workforce to about 380 from 260. Its profits are recorded here, but almost none of its new jobs. And they talk about how Santa Clara County employment, this is Silicon Valley, has declined by almost 20,000 from 787,200 down to 767,600 in the last 3 years. But during that same period of time, the companies, the seven largest companies by market value, have seen an increase in their profits of 500%. An increase, 500% increase in profits, 20,000 decline in employment. And they point out the whole definition of a recovery is that people have more jobs. I mean, they don't point that out. They point out that between 95 and 97, the last economic recovery period, Santa Clara County gained 82,800 jobs instead of losing 20,000 jobs as it has under Bush. So what we have here is what's called a jobless recovery. It's a recovery in terms of corporate profits. It's not a recovery if you define a recovery as, you know, more people have jobs now. More Americans can make a living. Wouldn't that be nice? Not what's going on. Another important issue here. This is actually huge. You will recall that Joe Wilson made a rather unambiguous statement, about 2 years ago. Joe Wilson came out. Joe Wilson, he was our ambassador to Iraq. Well, actually, it was like a charge d'affaires or whatever it was, because we didn't have an official ambassador to Iraq in 1991 when we declared war on them. But he was the guy who was there in Baghdad representing the United States. He has been our ambassador to several other countries. The guy uses diplomatic language generally. Here's, though, some blunt talk by Joseph Wilson, the husband of Valerie Plame.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And then he points out that he doesn't use that word, that name, Karl Rove, lightly. He doesn't just toss it out for fun.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
I measure my words. On the other hand, George Bush, now, if Karl Rove actually did it, if Karl Rove is the one who revealed the identity of Valerie Plame, the one who committed treason, if Karl Rove is the traitor against the United States that brought down a CIA operation that may have led to the death of CIA operatives and agents around the world, that crippled our anti-terrorism efforts, if Karl Rove is the guy who did it, then you would think that George W. Bush certainly knew about it. He would have known that the senior administration official who leaked this was Karl Rove. Because Karl Rove, after all, I mean, you know, he's responsible for Bush being president. He was responsible for Bush being governor. How could Rove have done this without Bush knowing it? And yet Bush said...
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official... Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
He just has no idea. So what the newspapers are reporting right now is that Robert Luskin, you'll recall when this thing first broke, almost 2 years ago, George Bush and Karl Rove both hired criminal defense lawyers, and they have had them on retainer all this time. Karl Rove's criminal defense lawyer, Robert Luskin, came out and spoke to the press. He told Newsweek that, yes, Karl Rove did talk to Matt Cooper, did talk to Time Magazine. We don't know if he specifically said Matt Cooper, but he said he did talk with Time Magazine. And this is what Lawrence O'Donnell calls the I did not inhale defense, or I would call it the I did not have sex with that woman defense. You'll recall Bill Clinton tried to redefine sex. If it doesn't produce babies, it's not sex. And here's what Robert Luskin actually said. Now, first of all, keep in mind, newspapers all over America are reporting right now that Karl Rove's lawyer came out and said that Rove did not leak Valerie Plame's name. In other words, he's not the traitor that, who committed treason and brought down a CIA agent within the United States. He's not the person who attacked our intelligence service within this country. That's what the newspapers are reporting. But in fact, that's not what Robert Luskin said. What Robert Luskin told Newsweek was that his client, Karl Rove, quote, never knowingly disclosed classified information, end quote. Now, knowing is the key word here. As Lawrence O'Donnell points out in an op-ed this week, he says, the covert agent, the law, U.S. Code, Title 50, Section 421, the law that makes it a crime to do what Rove apparently did, requires that whoever does it must do it, quote, knowing that the information disclosed so identifies such covert agent and that the United States is taking affirmative measures to conceal such covert agents' intelligence relationship to the United States, end quote. If Rove can successfully argue that he did not know that the CIA was trying to keep Valerie Plame's identity a secret, that her identity was classified information, if he can successfully argue that, then he can pull off something Bill Clinton couldn't pull off by trying to argue that the kind of sex that Bill and Monica had was not actually sex because it was not intercourse. And that's apparently what he's going to try and do. His lawyer is out here saying he never knowingly disclosed classified information. And it may be that the prosecutor's already bought that argument. This is, and you wonder, you know, a lot of people have been wondering, you know, okay, what was going on at the CIA? Why was it that they had to appoint a political hack, Porter Goss, a loyal Republican, with other than, you know, being, with let's say dubious connections to the intelligence community, at least in terms of senior management? Why was it that they had to put Porter Goss in charge of the CIA and immediately do what they called house cleaning? Why did he go in there and fire a bunch of people? Could it be that the CIA was starting to talk about revenge on Karl Rove? Why is it then that when Porter Goss started speaking out, after all, you join an organization, you become part of their culture. He's got to work with these guys day in, day out. There's a little bit of Stockholm syndrome there. I mean, you participate in any organization, you work side by side with people, you pick up their habits, you pick up their culture. Could it be that the reason why Porter Goss then was sidelined and Bush brought in John Negroponte and said, no, Negroponte is the guy in charge of intelligence, not Porter Goss. Porter Goss is no longer going to report to me. He's no longer going to report to the president. The CIA is not part of the cabinet meetings anymore. We don't want the daily briefings coming from the CIA anymore. We want them coming from Death Squad John. John Negroponte, the guy that they sent down to El Salvador and Nicaragua to organize the death squads and run them down there. And then sent over to Iraq. And right after he showed up as ambassador to Iraq, suddenly dead bodies started showing up all over Iraq. Death squads at work? Gee. Or is it just, what, rabid dogs? I don't know. But could we be seeing here a battle between the CIA and Bush? And if so, who's going to win it? I mean, Bush's father was the director of the CIA, keep in mind. He was a CIA agent for most of his life, a CIA asset, let's say. Bush's father. But that's a little different than Junior. Junior was a drunk most of his life and a failed businessman. Who had to be bailed out of his businesses by his father's friends, like Salman bin Laden, Osama's half-brother, who then, when people started looking into it, disappeared and died in a plane crash in Texas. No, I... Is that Hartman? Is he into conspiracy theory? No, I am not putting forward a conspiracy theory. I'm simply reporting the facts. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Scott in Richmond, Virginia on the line. Hey, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Hey,
what's
Tom,
up?
Getting with what you're talking about,
yeah.
There's an interpretation of the plane affair that I think I saw on Cost that hasn't been getting much play, but it really actually makes more sense, is that they weren't trying to attack Joe Wilson by outing Valerie Plame. They were actually trying to attack Valerie Plame because she was head of the group that was saying there were no WMDs in the CIA.
Well, she was the head of the group that was actually... She ran a
WMDs.
Right. She ran a front company that had offices all over the world that was selling weapons and weapons of mass destruction all the way down to like Kalashnikovs. I mean, you know, from bombs to on down, or said that they were selling them, to, you know, sort of quasi legally, in order to flush out the terrorists.
Right.
And so she had her finger on the pulse of what was happening with regard to weapons of mass destruction and weapons in general and terrorism around the world.
But there was a group in the CIA that was countering the WMD story,
mm-hmm.
and that by outing Valerie Plame, they kind of defanged that group,
mm-hmm.
so that there wouldn't be the counter information. And it actually makes more sense than just petty retribution.
Yeah,
was, you know, to nullify anything that went against their reasons for going to war.
Because they had to have their justification for war. Without
exactly.
that, they were in deep trouble. Interesting.
Well,
interesting. It makes sense, Scott. It makes sense. I mean,
it kind of makes more sense. Doing something so petty just to get back at Joseph Wilson, I hate to say, seems below them.
Well, except that when you look at George Bush's history as governor of Texas, this was the kind of thing that happened fairly regularly. And I mean, you know, even to the point of he was sitting with a Time magazine reporter, and this wasn't retribution. This was just, you know, the level of pettiness. And they were talking about Carla Faye Tucker, this woman who had become a born-again Christian. She had been convicted of murder. She was on death row in Texas. And she and the Pope, on her behalf, appealed to George W. Bush for mercy. And he put her to death. And then when the Time magazine reporter asked him about it, and he started laughing and rubbing his hands together and going, "Please, Mr. Governor Bush, please save me, please save me." And then he laughs hysterically.
Actually, it was Tucker Carlson that did the interview.
It was?
It was Tucker Carlson that did the... He said that kind of chilled his feelings towards George Bush.
Oh, my goodness. I thought it was a Time magazine reporter.
I'm pretty sure it was Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Well,
in any case, the interview happened, and we know that, I mean, this is on the record. I mean, this. So petty is not beneath this guy.
But if it was Karl Rove, Bush, we know, is petty and low. But Karl Rove is calculating.
Yeah.
And if you want to take the power away from the CIA, you take the power away from the chief investigator.
Yeah, and then you get Tenet out of the way, and then you put Porter Goss in, and then you have him fire a bunch of people, and then you put him underneath John Negroponte, who's a good soldier, and now you've got a CIA that functionally has no power.
CIA.
Yeah, interesting. A neutered CIA. Scott, thanks a lot for the call. Good point.
Care,
I'll have to track that down. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Tony, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Tony.
Tom Donaldson from Time magazine was quoted this morning as saying it was Karl Rove who's a snitch and he's turning the documents over to the court.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Donaldson, not Sam Donaldson of ABC, but another Donaldson? Or did you mean O'Donnell?
O'Donnell, yeah.
Yeah, Lawrence O'Donnell. Interesting.
Lawrence O'Donnell from Time.
He's actually, quoted. Lawrence O'Donnell is with Newsweek. They compete with Time.
Well, he was quoted as saying they're turning the documents over.
Yeah. Oh, so then somebody at Time magazine is quoted as saying, interesting. Okay, we'll have to keep
it was
up on this.
It was on Bill Press this morning.
Okay, I'll check it out. Thanks
all
a lot,
right.
Tony. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com, by the way, the website, if you want to drop in and say hi, participate in discussion with some of the finest minds on the Internet. By the way, Fox News, as of yesterday afternoon, had not yet reported on the fact that Karl Rove had been implicated in the Valerie Plame affair. I find that interesting. 4 days of silence from Fox News, and everybody else is talking about this. Well, what most of what everybody else is talking about is, you know, kid abducted, white girl vanished in Aruba, you know, tabloid stuff. that, you know, is big local stories. I mean, these are huge local stories, but spending 19 minutes of a CNN, you know, 30-minute newscast on abductions of two people, you know, when there's real stuff happening in the world, I mean, it doesn't make it for me. Charles Schumer now asking Karl Rove to come out and speak on person and say whether he was the guy who blew the whistle. We'll see what Rove has to say about this. This is the Chicago Tribune, again, reporting this in Tribune News Services, saying Rove's lawyer, Robert Luskin, told Newsweek that Rove never revealed classified information or told Time reporter Matthew Cooper the plane worked for the CIA. No, not quite. He never knowingly revealed that. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there.
And welcome back, my friends.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Ah, Leonard, from your lips to God's ears. Welcome back, my friends. 4 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Hartman. Ben in Elgin, Illinois on the line. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. You know, talking about the job problem in Silicon Valley, and in fact in all of the technical areas in this country, Research Triangle Park, the Silicon Prairie here in Illinois, and the profits, there's three things to keep in mind. Number one is at the end of the dot-com boom, and especially after 9/11, venture capital dried up and a lot of companies went under. I mean, just totally gone.
Right.
And this restricted the amount of competition in the marketplace. And that has served to increase the profits of those people who are still left
of the
in
survivors.
The market.
Yeah.
Right, and number one. Number two, a lot of the jobs doing embedded systems programming, which is really a lot of what was done in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, things for routers, things for firewalls, et cetera, a lot of those jobs are now in Bangalore and
yeah.
in China.
Oh, yeah. I was in India half a decade ago or so when Microsoft was running a jobs fair down there.
Yes, I saw this starting to happen when I worked for Motorola in the early 90s. And in fact, it has proceeded unabated as a trend since then. And finally, the problem is, and the reason a lot of these jobs are going overseas, and I really hate to have to say this, a lot of American software guys are really incompetent.
Yeah, well, that's a tragedy that we can track back to a school system that is not being funded and is not. I mean, we are not investing in our people. We are not investing in our infrastructure. We're trying to do everything on the cheap and everything in a nice little ticky-tacky fashion, and it's destroying America. It's destroying America's competitiveness. It's destroying our country.
Exactly right,
Ben. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Oh my goodness, what can we do? Well, what we can do is we can get active. You can get active. Join Meetup for Democracy, democracyforamerica.org, or .com, rather, democracyforamerica.com. Join the Democratic Party. Join the Green Party. Join the Republican Party. Get active. We need to take back all of these political parties, the Progressive Party. Pick one. Show up. You know, rent a room in the local library and do a screening of the end of affluence or something. Start getting involved.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to Pennsylvania, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, Live 365's American FM, and WhiteRoseSociety.org, where we're also archived and podcast. Welcome back to our program. Bioneers. Bioneers are biological pioneers who are working with nature to heal nature and ourselves. Bioneers are scientists and artists, gardeners and economists, activists and public servants, architects and ecologists, farmers and journalists, priests and shamans, policymakers and citizens. They herald a dawning age of restoration founded in natural principles of kinship, interdependence, cooperation, reciprocity, and community. For our Bioneers segment this week, we have with us John Stauber. John is the founder and executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy, a nonprofit watchdog that investigates and exposes corporate and government propaganda campaigns. He's the author of five books, including the New York Times bestseller Weapons of Mass Deception, and then also Banana Republicans, Trust Us, We're Experts, Mad Cow USA, and Toxic Sludge is Good for You. Hey, John, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, it's great to be on your program.
It is great to have you back here. You've been following the mad cow disease situation for some time. In fact, it seems like it was about 2 years ago you were on our program talking about it's coming, it's coming. Guess what?
Right, it's here now. And this all started for me about 15 years ago. 8 years ago, Sheldon Rampton and I wrote our book, Mad Cow USA, which predicted that mad cow disease would emerge here in the U.S. because rather than taking the steps necessary to stop it or prevent it, the cattle industry and the U.S. government were simply lying to us and continuing this practice of feeding hundreds of millions of pounds of slaughterhouse waste a year back to livestock. That's what spreads the disease. That's what's still going on. They're still lying to us, even with the disease here.
How do they get away with this? I mean, how can they say... Well, first of all, give me an example of an actual lie that they're putting out.
Well, here's an actual lie. A week ago, the chief veterinarian for the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, John Clifford, held a news conference announcing that indeed this cow that first showed positive for mad cow disease in November and then was declared by USDA not to have it, did have it, does have it. And he said, but don't worry because there is a ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban in the U.S., and so this prevents any spreading of the disease. And we've had this in place since 1997.
In shorthand, ruminants, by and large, are cows and
right.
pigs.
Right. What he was saying is that slaughterhouse waste from the cattle industry is no longer fed back to cattle. And indeed, that's what we should do. But in reality, in 97, when that regulation was developed, they exempted cattle fat and cattle blood. And so massive quantities of cattle blood are now legally fed to cattle in the U.S., even though blood transmits mad cow disease. We are literally weaning dairy calves on calf starter and calf milk replacer, whose protein source is cattle blood. So when the top veterinarian in the USDA says, we have a ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban like other countries do that prevents the spread of this, you know, it's a lie, and what it is really is the big lie tactic. If the media doesn't get on this, if the mainstream TV corporate media isn't exposing it, most people just hear the lie repeated over and over and feel like, well, we've taken the steps we need to take.
Now, the reason they're feeding cattle blood to calves, I'm assuming, is because cattle blood is, by and large, a waste byproduct of the slaughter industry. There's not a lot of people out there who want to eat blood pudding anymore. And so it's cheap stuff that can be added to milk to give to calves, and it also then gives the calves an additional nutrients that cause them to grow faster. Is that a good
right.
summary?
It's a cheap way to feed them,
basically.
Right, and that's what's going on here in the U.S. You know, in other countries that have had this horrific fatal dementia disease, Britain, Japan, Germany, Italy, France, they've taken the two steps you have to take, the only two steps you can take, to stop the disease. You put in place a real firewall feed ban that says no more animal protein fed to livestock, no more taking the slaughter industry's waste and turning it into fat and protein supplement. That stops the spread of the disease, and safety testing every animal so that for 3 or 4 cents per pound of meat, a cow or a beef steer is actually tested for the disease, and if it tests positive, it's not put into the human food supply. We do neither of those here in the United States, and the position of the U.S. government is to protect the ability of the massive meat and livestock and animal feed industry to keep turning hundreds of millions of pounds of slaughterhouse waste into this feed for cattle.
Now, if the entire industry were to simply say, okay, we're going to follow the regulations, or if the regulations were tightened up and then enforced, and the entire industry said, okay, that's it, no more blood, no more cow blood for calves, for example, no more, you know, possible transmission of any kind of cow-to-cow disease, it seems that if it was industry-wide, the increase in expense would be industry-wide, and the cost of beef would be industry, you know, the increased cost of beef would go up. So a pound of beef is going to go up by a nickel, a dime, 15, 20 cents, whatever it's going to go. And they could simply pass that along to consumers, and there would be no hit on their profits. Why, if that's the case, is the cattle industry opposed to this? Or are they afraid that meat is so price-sensitive that if it goes up 10 or 15 cents a pound, people will start buying chicken or fish or pork or something?
Well, it's really the biggest players in the industry, the lobbyists for Tyson and Cargill and Swift and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the American Meat Institute, the American Feed Industry Association, that simply don't want to give this up. But your point essentially is correct. This isn't going to collapse the meat and livestock industry. It's just going to create a level playing field that would force them to take these necessary steps to prevent the spread of this fatal dementia disease among livestock and into people. But it's really arrogance and hubris, and it just shows the political power and also the power of the meat and livestock industry to manipulate and manage the media that they ain't going to do it because they don't have to do it because no one's making them do it.
I noticed we're talking with John Stauber with PRWatch.org and the author of numerous books, including Mad Cow USA and your most recent book, Weapons of Mass Deception. And, John, in the media reports I saw, this cow, this Downer cow, who tested positive for mad cow, back last year was made into pet food. Has anybody looked into the pet food industry and the effect on, I mean, are we seeing now mad cow disease in our dogs and cats?
Well, it'd be very easy to miss a fatal dementia disease in dogs and cats, but indeed in Britain, they did see mad cow disease spread into house cats and into zoo animals, and that was the first real indication that this disease would spread into people. It was just less than 10 years ago, March 20th, 1996, that the British government announced, gee, we've been wrong for a decade. People have begun dying of this horrific fatal dementia. There's no cure for human mad cow disease. And just last year, Britain announced that they now have two cases of human mad cow disease that they believe spread through the blood supply. And for many years now, Britain has refused to use its own human blood because of the concern that mad cow disease could spread into the blood supply, people infected with the disease, invisibly incubating it, giving blood donations and then infecting the blood supply. And that apparently has happened in Britain. So not only are we risking spreading the disease through infected beef here in the United States, we are also risking losing access to our own human blood supply simply so the Bush administration can continue to guarantee the cattle industry and the livestock industry that it can use its slaughterhouse waste as supplemental fat and protein for its animals.
Is it already too late? I mean, is this one of those day late and dollar short stories?
It is definitely
the cow's out of the barn, as they say.
Well, yeah, it is to a degree, but still, it's the sooner we put into place these measures, the less of a problem we'll be facing. But in humans, there's an invisible incubation period that can last decades. You could char infected mad cow to ashes. The ashes would still be infective. And in cattle also, there's a 5 to 8 year latency period. And because we're continuing to feed not just cattle blood, but also cattle fat, meat, and bone meal from pigs back to cattle, and 1 million tons a year of poultry litter, up to 30% of which can be spilled and defecated cattle meat and bone meal back to cattle, we are continuing to amplify and spread the disease. And because we test so few cattle, and in fact we need a criminal investigation of the Agriculture Department's testing program after this latest flub, we don't know exactly how much of the disease we have here in cattle in North America.
To what extent should vegetarians who think that they are, or say just fish eaters who think that they are immune to this, be concerned if they take supplements that are in gelatin capsules?
Well, there are all sorts of hypothetical ways in which vegetarians could contract this disease, but I think what vegetarians should realize is that there are some 600 biologics that are made from animals. These are drugs that are animal-sourced. Insulin used to be, now it's mostly engineered, but there are some 600 biologics that could be contaminated. If the blood supply is infected with human mad cow disease, that affects everyone who ever needs any blood products. So this is indeed an issue that not only affects meat eaters, but affects everyone, and that's why we need regulations. One of the most outrageous positions that the federal government has taken is that it is, and you will not believe this, Tom, but it is illegal for any private beef producer or cattle slaughter plant or meat plant in the United States to test for mad cow disease. There was a company in Arkansas, Creekstone, that wanted to reopen its market to Japan. Japan has shut off its market to the U.S. because of mad cow disease. They negotiated with Japan. Japan said, you test your cattle the way we test every animal, and we'll accept your cattle that test free of the disease. The U.S. Department of Agriculture stepped in and said, no, it is under a 1913 law, our opinion that it is illegal for you to test cattle, and we will sue you. The federal government will sue you if you do.
That's remarkable. We have about 30 seconds left. We're talking with John Stauber of PRWatch.org and the author of a variety of books, including Mad Cow USA. John, you've got a no-fake news campaign. Where can people find more information about that?
Well, the easiest thing, Tom, on any of these issues is to go to PRWatch.org. You can sign up for our campaign to stop TV producers from airing phony news stories as real news stories. That'll blow your mind. And also, you can read my most recent blog posting on the mad cow issue.
And this is all at PRWatch.org.
Correct.
In fact, isn't the new president of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, they're thinking of renaming Republican Broadcasting, one of the purveyors of fake news?
Well, fake news runs deep in the broadcast industry, and there's a lot of people involved.
Yeah, remarkable. John Stauber, PRWatch.org. You can get more information about it. New York Times bestseller, Weapons of Mass Deception, Banana Republicans, Mad Cow USA, Toxic Sludge is Good for You. Trust us, we're experts. Banana Republicans. John, thanks so much for being with us in the Bioneers section of our program here.
See you at Bioneers.
Yeah, indeed. See you there. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, if you want to drop into our live chat room, just click live chat. It'll get you in there. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor leaving the bench after 24 years. Wall Street Journal, an interesting piece on the topic today, they start out talking about how this by Jess Braven and Jeannie Cummings, talking about how Sandra Day O'Connor is leaving. Bush says he's not going to announce a nominee until he gets back from Scotland and has an opportunity to meet with both parties. And so, you know, we've got a week here that we can lobby or talk about it or consider it or whatever. Evangelical Christians, they note, are the most vocal. Because Justice O'Connor was the swing vote. She was the one who said, no, you can't force churches on people in the courtroom, for example. You can't force religion on people in the courtroom. And she was the one who, in a 92 case, upheld, essentially, Roe v. Wade. And Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, president of the Family Research Council, this you know, uber right-wing religious group, says, on almost every issue, she has been against us. But, notes the Wall Street Journal, and see, this is the first cleavage of the right wing. For the business community, however, the departure of Justice O'Connor, 75 years old, is the loss of an ally who took a skeptical view of big jury awards, claims allowed under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and employment and government contract quotas. Stan Anderson of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says, we felt she was a very business-friendly person because of her very practical approach. We are clearly going to miss her, and we hope a candidate of the same kind of stature, philosophy, and discipline is nominated to replace her. So what you're seeing here is the beginning of a battle between the religious conservatives and the business community over the Supreme Court. Hey, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, our report for the day. Hey, Victoria, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, delighted to be with you on this very quiet day in Washington, D.C.
Okay, and thank you. What's up? What's happening with George W.? He's up for he's in for a rather rude welcome, shall we say, when he gets to Denmark, is he not?
Yes, he's got wheels up at the moment, and we're informed that this is the trip on which he's going to be very carefully studying names for the Supreme Court, because apparently, according to his press secretary, he hasn't considered this at all before. And then he goes to Denmark, he has a couple of meetings, and then on he goes to Gleneagles in Scotland for the G8 summit. Who knows whether he even was aware that there were Live 8 concerts? I mean, I don't know how aware he is of any of the concerns that people have. He certainly has his own agenda. The other people have their own agenda, and he is at odds with the other seven on several issues, as you know.
Shouldn't he be very carefully studying global warming, since that's the theme of the G8 conference, and Tony Blair is the leader of it this year, and he said that that's going to be the signature issue?
Oh, that! Well... except the president says that, you know, we have to study the science on this, Tom. You know, we don't know enough about it. We have to study the science. So he probably feels it's premature for him to look at anything on it until they finish their studies. Even the governor of California, the governator himself, has written an op-ed saying the science is in. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
We've got global warming. Hello.
Amazing, amazing.
It so, really is. And
at what point does Tony Blair say to George Bush, you know, no more, I'm not going to put up with this?
I don't think he can, because he's allied himself so much with Bush that he cannot say anything publicly. I mean, he can beg the guy, but Bush knows that Blair isn't up for election anytime soon, even though Blair could still lose the premiership if his own party loses confidence in him. There really isn't anything that Blair can do. He can ask for a few concessions. He may get some concessions on Africa, which is, you know, the other big issue,
right.
But I don't think he's going to get any concessions on global warming at all, and Blair is going to be embarrassed.
Yeah. Amazing. Victoria Jones, thanks so much for the report today from Washington, D.C.
Thank you.
And good luck. Keep your wits about you. You're listening to the radio support group of, by, and for We the People, the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be back right after this.
Years, more and more tech workers will leave the profession. The firm says that those with information technology skills are more and more often moving into jobs dealing with business strategy.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 27 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our phone number, tomhartman.com. The website, drop into our live chat room if you'd like. Civil Liberties, the United Church of Christ. Did you catch this over the weekend? This happened on Monday, on the 4th of July. I believe it was on Monday. Might have happened Sunday afternoon. In any case, this weekend, the United Church of Christ. This is the church that had been running the ads that at least one of the networks refused to carry. that showed a pastor at a church and people coming up and an openly gay couple coming up. And I, you know, I don't recall now if the ad, if they were being turned away and there was also people of color coming up, and whether they were being turned away or whether they were being accepted, and whether the ad said, you know, we don't turn away people, you're all welcome here at the United Church of Christ, or if it simply said, you know, everybody's welcome. But the point of it was that the United Church of Christ was accepting, was welcoming people who were gay, in addition to other, you know, chain differences, other minorities. And this lit off a bit of a firestorm within the United Church of Christ, and so, which is one of the mainstream Protestant denominations in the United States. And so there was a, finally, it came to a head, an official resolution was placed before the entire mainline synod, or the mainline group, I'm not sure the word that they use for that, and to say, you know, basically, should they back up what they called, the resolution affirmed, quote, equal marriage rights for couples regardless of gender, end quote. And they actually used the Bible as the basis for their decision. They said, in the gospel we find ground for a definition of marriage and family relationships based on the affirmation of the full humanity of each partner lived out in mutual care and respect for one another. Now, this is a church that was on the forefront of animal rights, the forefront of anti-slavery, of civil rights. In fact, here they say the church, they were among the first churches to take a stand against slavery. In 1700, the first to ordain a woman. And in 1853, and the first to publish an inclusive language hymnal in 1995. Sorry, I said animal rights in there. I'm not sure where I got that from. It's I was misreading. But human rights. Thank you. So in addition to this, as the Center for American Progress notes, while the United Church of Christ is taking steps forward, the military continues to remain embedded in the doctrine of discrimination. 12 military service members are challenging the military's 12-year-old don't ask, don't tell policy on the basis that it violates their constitutional right to privacy, free speech, and equal protection under the law. The Bush administration will ask a federal judge in Boston to dismiss the lawsuit, notes the Center for American Progress, claiming that the policy rationally furthers the government's interests in maintaining unit cohesion, reducing sexual tension, and promoting personal privacy, a statement that apparently has never been backed up by a single shred of evidence. The administration defending this bigotry against gays when all around us, other nations are openly accepting gays into their military. I mean, our lead ally in the coalition of the willing is the UK, where gays are accepted into the military enthusiastically. This is backed up, this position of the U.S. military, backed up by not one shred of evidence. Not one. Furthermore, notes the Center for American Progress, the administration defends the bigoted policy by saying, quote, the military is characterized by its own rules and traditions, including some restrictions that would not be accepted in civilian society. This is such a reversal, you know. It was the military that was integrated before our schools were. The military has long been at the lead of civil rights. And I think it's just tragic that it has been, that it's been politicized here, and that we're not, that our military is not getting with the program, that they're not waking up on these issues. Randy Duke Cunningham, Congressman Duke Cunningham, Randy Cunningham, a little bit of a problem here. This is the guy who sold his house to a defense contractor, a contractor by the name of MZM. And then they sold it and somehow managed to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars on the sale, which Randy made. And then he's been living on their boat for more than a year. It's also been revealed that the Duke Stir has been put up for sale, with Cunningham listed on flyers as the contact person for information about the boat. His district had an annual 4th of July pancake breakfast this last weekend. He didn't show up. the Republican from California, Duke Cunningham, beginning to take a fall. We'll see. Speaking of California, Freeman in San Diego on the line. Hey, Freeman, thanks for calling 866-889-8894.
Hey, Tom, I got a question about the Valerie Plame, Matt Cooper, that whole thing.
Yeah.
If Karl Rove is the person that leaked the information, why would the, I presume, the Bush administration be pushing for Matt Cooper's source if it's only going to implicate them?
Well, first of all, it's not the Bush administration who's pushing for it. It's this independent prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald. And there's some speculation that this might have been a way to slow things down until after the elections. Keep in mind this, you know, he had said, Fitzgerald had said that he had everything wrapped up in October. Well, that was not the time that, you know, a good Republican would trot out a case, an indictment against Karl Rove. So it could have been a delaying tactic. Or it could be, there's some speculation that really what he's trying to do is he's trying to get enough information that he can nail down a solid defense for Rove, that Rove really didn't knowingly release classified information, that classified information got released but not knowingly. So there's this distinction in the law, sort of like manslaughter and murder. You know, if you accidentally kill somebody and you have some culpability in it, even though it wasn't your intention, you can be convicted of manslaughter. Well, under the outing a CIA agent law, if you knowingly out a CIA agent, but you don't know that that CIA agent is trying to not be outed, is trying to maintain a cover, then you're not guilty of a crime. It's like manslaughter with no penalty.
Why wouldn't they just not pursue the case at all then?
Well, because that would just look too bad. You know, they can't do that.
I mean, well, it seems like they'd have an easy out. They say, well, you know, these journalists don't have to tell us their source. There's not a whole lot we can do. It's like, why would you put them in jail? I mean, that seems like it's crazy enough to do in the first place, but why would you do it if it's going to shoot your own foot?
Well, we're not going to find out until this stuff really comes out. And it may be that Fitzgerald is actually building a case against Karl Rove. I mean, maybe that he's actually going to do his job. I just don't know. I mean, you'd be asking me to read his mind, and I can't do that. But that's the range of possibilities, that it's part of an ongoing cover-up, that it's part of a way of deep-sixing it. I mean, it's like the anthrax attacks, for example. You could say, why isn't there anything going on with the anthrax attacks versus the Valerie Plame thing?
Right.
Well, there is nobody who has inside information about the anthrax attacks like Joe Wilson does about the Valerie Plame thing, who wrote a book about it, Wilson has done, who's traveling around the country speaking about it, who refuses to let the issue die, who keeps talking to reporters about it, you know, blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. It was like, basically, if it wasn't for Joe Wilson pretty much single-handedly pushing this thing, particularly at events for the media, I don't think I think it would be in the same place where the anthrax investigation is, which is nowhere.
Okay. So,
but, you know, who knows? Time will tell. Freeman, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks.
Good to hear from you. Bush's case. Bush's. And now here you've got Chuck Hagel. This is really remarkable. Chuck Hagel, the guy who was formerly the president of the voting machine company that became ES&S. He was recruited away from the campaign, or from the staff of George Herbert Walker Bush, George Bush Sr. He was recruited away from this staff by this voting machine company in Nebraska. Goes out to Nebraska, takes the job as the CEO, sells their voting machines to the state of Nebraska, gets them installed all across the state, and then decides to run for political office, decides to run for the Senate. Well, the governor, the very popular Democratic governor that year, had decided that he was going to run for the Senate. And everybody said, hey, no Republican can beat this guy. No Republican has been, you know, voted into the Senate in Nebraska in decades, in generations. But Chuck Hagel decided to run. He did not reveal to the people of Nebraska that he was the CEO of the voting machine company. Instead, he told them that he was made his money in investments. And mysteriously, miraculously, let's say, miraculously, Chuck Hagel won in districts that, according to Bev Harris, in even in African-American districts that had never before voted Republican, Chuck Hagel won and was sent off to the Senate. And 6 years later, then won again with the biggest margin in the history of the Senate. Charlie Matilka, the Democrat who ran against him 3.5 years ago, still, running around saying the election was rigged. He's very, very upset about this. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Chuck Hagel certainly was not pleased when it came out that he was the president of the voting machine company. When The Hill, one of the publications, the Washington, D.C. Insider, Inside Politics publications, came out with this story, he sent his lawyers over to threaten them, asking them not to publish it. They published it anyway. And I wrote a piece about it about that same time. So anyhow, Chuck Hagel, and I predicted back 3 years ago when I wrote the first piece about Chuck Hagel, which you can find if you go to TomHartmann.com and click Articles on Democracy. You'll find it down there. What I predicted was that Chuck Hagel would one day run for president. Once his voting machine company had voting machines all across the United States, you will see this guy run for president. And sure enough, here he is. Not quite saying that he's running for president, but here, an interview by Deborah Solomon in the New York Times this weekend, yesterday. Day before yesterday. Anyhow, day before yesterday. You're one of a growing number of Republicans, she says, who have lately accused President Bush of botching the war in Iraq. Hagel trying to position him. See, he knows which way the wind is blowing. He knows that Bush is going down for a fall. This war is not popular, and it's only going to get more unpopular. So he says, if someone says I am a disloyal Republican because I am not supporting my party, let them say it. War is bigger than politics. Whoa. And so all over America, you've got independents who have been voting Republican recently and now are starting to get disenchanted with the Republican Party because of the economics and the war, saying, oh, maybe this guy. Deborah Solomon says, you, John McCain, and John Kerry are the only current U.S. senators who served in Vietnam. Now, was she trying to figure out how do I get it on the record that this guy's a Vietnam vet, or did he say, would you please ask me about Vietnam? Who knows? Anyhow, he says, his response, I got to Vietnam in December of 1967, and I was wounded twice, but my brother Tom, who was with me, I still have some shrapnel in my chest that the doctors never took out. The second time, my face was burned pretty bad, and I had both eardrums blown out. She says, are you saying you're deaf? He says, eardrums heal, but I did lose some hearing. She says, did you kill anyone in the war? He says, well, I'm sure I did. He's a tough guy. Unlike George W., who got in the Champaign unit of the Texas Air National Guard. Deborah Solomon says, how would you compare the situation in Iraq with the one in Vietnam? He says, Congress was absent during the Vietnam War, and they didn't ask the tough questions, and consequently we lost 58,000 Americans and lost a war and humiliated this nation. It took a generation to get over it. He said, as long as I'm here as a U.S. senator, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that isn't going to happen. Sorry, Chuck, it's already happened. I mean, here we are. It's already going on. She says, what do you suggest that the president do? He says, for starters, we don't have enough troops. And he goes on and on. She says, what about the deficit? So we have $400 billion. Aren't we sort of out of money? He says, in terms of the deficit, we've blown the top off. We're a bunch of Democrats. She says, I've never heard anyone call President Bush a Democrat. He says, that's my point. We're less honest about it. We built the biggest government history has ever seen under a Republican government. He's right, by the way. He says, the Democrats are better because they're honest about it. They don't pretend. I admire that. They'll say, we want more money. We need more money. So she says, where are you going to take the party? He says, I'll take it back to the party of Eisenhower, Goldwater, and Reagan. Pretty simple party in those days. Reagan? Reagan built the biggest government in the history of the United States up until that point. Reagan bloated the government. Reagan threw us into debt. Goldwater never ran the country. And Eisenhower ran on a campaign of peace and was in favor of a 90% income tax. Top marginal tax rate. But Hagel says, well, it was all about limited government, fiscal responsibility, strong national defense, and pro-trade foreign policy. I don't think so. She says, will that be your message in 2008? In the presidential campaign, he says, well, first of all, I've said I'm not running. She says, you're rumored to be a candidate. He says, as John McCain has said to me, anyone who's not in detox is rumored to be a candidate. So, Chuck Hagel coming along. I'm telling you, keep your eyes on this guy. He is a serious potential And now Charlie Schumer, Chuck Schumer of New York, is calling on the White House for Karl Rove to comment on the Valerie Plame thing, on outing Valerie Plame. Karl Rove, are you going to come out and tell the people that you didn't knowingly out a CIA agent like your lawyer has done? Oh, he didn't knowingly do this. He wouldn't knowingly do that. Robert Luskin, Rove's lawyer. Carl didn't know. Just watch the rhetoric. It'll be fascinating to watch this, particularly if and when Fox News begins to cover the story. It'll be fascinating to watch it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where smart people get their news. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Tom, I just caught the tail end of your comments about Senator Hagel there in the last segment, and I'm just wondering, I bounced this off of you. I, as a liberal Democrat, always think, well, if I can't get what I want, you know, I look for the least evil. Am I wrong to think that if we have to get another Republican president, that this guy would be halfway decent?
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I think a lot of people are scratching their heads asking that question, and it... It seems that way on the surface. I mean, it seems that way that Chuck Hagel is a decent guy. Why did he try to conceal his presidency of a voting machine company? You know, what happened with the voting machine company? Is the I'm a decent guy defense the kind of thing? I mean, are we looking at something like, you know, the mafia here? You know, as somebody who, you know, does whatever it takes to become president, and then the agenda emerges? Or are we looking at somebody who's a decent guy who just happened to be the president of a voting machine company for a while, and we shouldn't hold that against him?
Could be the latter, we would hope, huh?
Well, you know, you would hope so. And you know, I suppose, you know, giving Chuck Hagel the benefit of the doubt, I would be inclined to go along with that. But I don't know. I remember the day when I was working on that first article on voting machines. This was, you know, a couple of years ago, about all the anomalies and all this stuff. And we had just found out, Bev Harris had just told me about Chuck Hagel's past and his involvement with ESNS, or what is now ESNS. And she called up to say that the Alexander... I'm forgetting his last name now, but anyhow, a fellow by the name of Alexander, who's a reporter for The Hill, had just had two lawyers from Hagel's office show up and threaten him, you know, in his office. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? Well, they didn't, Hagel's office didn't want it revealed that he was running a voting machine company. And, you know, why? Why would he be ashamed of that? Why would he be embarrassed about that? You know, what's going on? And then you get Charlie Matulka, the Democrat that he ran against, who's running around saying right up front and right out loud, you know, that the guy fixed the election. And so, you know, that makes me a little concerned, frankly.
Well, I guess our only other alternative is McCain then, huh?
Yeah, I suppose. I think our alternative, Rick, is to work to get Democrats elected.
Well, I know, but I mean on the other side.
Yeah. John McCain is probably less toxic than the rest of them. But here's a guy who's anti-abortion and pro-free trade. It's so important, I think, that we need to be putting our focus into getting Democrats elected. That's just, it's at the grassroots level. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. That's really where the focus has to be. And we can do that right now. We can get involved.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Library. Industries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Glad to be with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast and border to border. You are in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire. No cops with guns saying, go over there, boy. The president's speaking over there about a mile away, and you can't get any closer to him. As happened on the 4th of July yesterday. Yep, they herded the protesters into a corral, took them off, hauled them away. You can't speak. You cannot speak out if the president is speaking. No, that would not make a good photo opportunity. Ain't going to happen. George W. Bush was just interviewed in Great Britain. Got an interesting transcript on that to share with you. And there is a soldier in Iraq who is running his own blog. His name is Leonard Clark. He's stationed just outside of Baghdad. The blog is leonardclark.com/blog. I want to share with you some pieces from that. Leonard Clark has been ordered to shut up. And he appears to be ready to defy those orders. So, we'll get into that in just a few minutes. First, our telephone number, 866-889-8894. Isabel in Portland, Maine on the line. Hey, Isabel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm calling to ask about CAFTA. I've noticed in the op-ed pieces that I've read that the opinion writers talk about loss of jobs and labor problems, but they never get to what I consider the worst part of it, and that is the loss of sovereignty by states and towns in relation to being sued by corporations when And I would really like you to write an op-ed piece. That's what I'm calling to ask. If you would write an op-ed piece for the New York Times or whatever other newspapers, which points out this terrible loss of local control and also the loss of judicial rights through the tribunal that they're setting up to adjudicate these cases.
Yeah, in fact, there's a national loss of sovereignty as well as a local loss of sovereignty. You're a good suggestion, Isabel, and I will take that seriously. I would love to write an op-ed piece about that, so thank you for the suggestion. I think that this... You know, the conservatives have a long history of being very upset about our involvement in the United Nations because Article 6 of the Constitution says that if we sign a treaty with another nation, that treaty becomes the law of the land and is superior to any laws that have been passed at the state or local level or at the federal, state, or local level. And so conservatives, ever since Woodrow Wilson first started pushing for our joining the League of Nations, but certainly since we joined the United Nations, conservatives have been saying, wait a minute, this is a surrender of national sovereignty. We can't make war on another nation now without permission of the United Nations, for example, or be subject to penalties thereof. And as you correctly point out, there is a much greater loss of sovereignty under not just CAFTA, but NAFTA and and the WTO, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, which led to the WTO. These are substantial treaties. There's an entire chapter of them about them in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance.
I've read it.
Yeah, okay, so you know. These are substantial surrenders of sovereignty that make the conservatives are right that we have surrendered some sovereignty to the United Nations. The flip side of that is that that's what you do in exchange for having a United Nations. Every nation surrenders sovereignty to the United Nations, and what hopefully comes out of that is world peace.
I'm all for that, but I'm not for this other loss of sovereignty where we get no return.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, who's getting the return of the multinational corporations? And they're the ones who are paying the politicians' bills. And that's why that's what's going on right now. Yes. Isabel, thank you for the call, and I will take your advice very seriously.
I need to sound the alarm.
I'll do my best, and I'll continue
thank
doing
you.
It here on the radio. Thank you, Isabel. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to us there in Maine. Steve in Atlanta, Georgia on the line. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I hear you talking about infiltrating the Democratic Party and want to share you my experience. We've begun to do so down here in your old stomping grounds.
Hey, congratulations. Good
yeah.
on you.
Well, you know, we hadn't officially joined yet. I went to one of the monthly meetings, the official local meeting of one of the county Democratic meetings, and it was just dreadfully boring. It was all talk about fundraising this and fundraising that and bylaws this and... You know, my wife and I are kind of restless. We're like, hey, well, you know, yeah, I got a couple questions. You know, you guys doing any email lists? Are you doing this or that? You know, when are we going to start griping about the Republicans? You know, let's get fired up here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just kind of met with a little hostility. And, you know, just like, I'm basically, you know, this isn't the place for that. I mean, so what is your experience with other, have you ever been to a local party meeting? I mean, do they discuss things like that?
Yeah, well, you get all of the above. I mean, it really varies on where you're at, whether you're at a precinct level or whether you're a county level or a state level.
Mm-hmm.
I just a month ago here in Portland, Oregon, spoke at a Democratic meeting, a Democratic Party meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fundraiser, actually. And they were really whipped up. I mean, it was like, you know, let's get out there and kick George Bush's butt. You know, let's take back the House of Representatives in the state of Oregon for the Democrats. It's a
mm-hmm.
six-vote. The Republicans hold it by 6 votes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really on fire. So,
mm-hmm.
and we've had other folks on the program who, you know, Jeff in Denver, for example, comes to mind who got active with his local Democratic Party, infiltrated
mm-hmm.
the party. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, at one point they were looking around saying, okay, we've got to have somebody to do thus and so. And he says, I'll do it. And, boom, you know, he ends up getting elected to something, you know.
So
I would say don't give up.
Don't give up.
In fact, what you need to do is, how many people were at that meeting?
There were probably 15, 20.
15 to 20. Okay, so what you need to do is you need to find 20 to 30 people
uh-huh.
to show up at the next meeting.
Right. And what it is, and I was talking to the guy that takes your calls, and he's experiencing the same thing, and he said it perfectly. It's like there's an old guard that's installed there. And they're kind of protecting their territory almost.
That's right.
You know, and right when I said that, right when they kind of countered, you know, kind of got on to me for bringing that up, right after the meeting, all of these people came up and said, hey, Steve, I know what you're talking about. And, you know, they don't want to do that here. You know, you need to go to these other meetings, these other, like, meetups.
Yeah, Democracy for America things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, I think it's important to do both.
Exactly.
I really think it's important to do both and get the Democracy for America meetup folks over there to the Democratic Party meeting. Because
mm-hmm.
what you have is you have people who have been Democrats all their lives. They,
mm-hmm.
It's become, you know, it's like for some people going to church on Sunday. It's more
mm-hmm.
a social function than anything else for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, going to the political meeting, it's a social function. You know, they in another lifetime or in another experience or if their life's experiences have been slightly different, they might have been showing up for the Elks meeting or for the Moose, you know, or for the
mm-hmm.
for the Masons or something. And you know, they like the fact that they've got a little bit of notoriety and they get to
yes.
go to the national meeting once a year and maybe even the party will pay their way. And,
right.
you know, there's some perks associated with it and they get some status in their community and all that kind of, you know, and they're in it. And those are not bad reasons
right.
to be involved.
But, yeah.
but right now, I'm sorry, our country's in a crisis.
Right.
And we need to be replacing the fossils in the Democratic Party or
mm-hmm.
with people who are full of spit and fire, you know, a little,
mm-hmm.
little vinegar there and get them out there. And so, as I said, if there was 15 or 20 people at that meeting, you need to show up at the
mm-hmm.
next meeting with 20 to 30 people because
right.
eventually a vote will be taken.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And when that vote is taken, you take it over. And by the way, what I'm telling you, I know will work because it's what happened to the Republican Party in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At first, when we kind of got yelled at, my wife and I were like, God, do we want to join this? And they were like, no, see, you know, this is what we need to do. This is more reason to take over.
Exactly. You know, this is
the problem.
Right. What we're talking about right now is the strategy that Ralph Reed laid out for the Christian Coalition and other fundamentalists with regard to taking over the Republican Party.
Okay.
And it's really interesting because you've got a bunch of right-wing, a small sect of right-wing conservative Christians who took over the Republican Party, and now the Republican Party is starting to take over churches. I mean, they passed out $1 billion to churches last year. And so it's like, you know, both Jefferson and Madison's worst vision. Jefferson was afraid of churches taking over government. Madison was afraid that government would corrupt churches. Both of them thought that there should be a wall between church and state for their own respective reasons. They were both right, it turns out. But in any case, we need to take over the Democratic Party. We who have no other agenda than democracy.
I just want to share that experience with you. And before I hang up, just ask a question, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answer on there. Has anything ever come up with all the protesters in New York during the Republican convention that were just kind of rounded up?
To the best of my knowledge, there are a couple of lawsuits that are moving through slowly. There was something about them in the news about 3 weeks ago, and my recollection was that one of the cases was dismissed. I frankly don't, you know, I don't live in New York and don't have that at the tip of my tongue, but... let me track it down and get back to you on that, Steve. Thanks a lot. I'd rather not just, you know, go off not being sure. George W. Bush, he's in an interview with Lord, what's his name? This guy here. Is it Lord? No, it's Sir. Sir Trevor MacDonald. And this is going to be broadcast at 8 o'clock p.m. on ITV1 in the U.K. That would be... 8 p.m. would be, what, 3 p.m.? Yeah, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, which would be noon Pacific Time. So it'll be broadcast as soon as this program gets off the air. And Sir Trevor MacDonald asking Bush questions. He says, Mr. President, if I can move on to the question of Iraq, when we last spoke before the Iraq War, I asked you about Saddam Hussein, and you said this, and I quote, and he quotes George Bush then, he harbors and develops weapons of mass destruction, make no mistake about it, end quote. Trevor MacDonald then says, today, no WMD. The war has cost 1,700 American lives, many more Iraqi civilians killed, hundreds of billions of dollars in cost to your country. Can you understand why some people in your country are now beginning to wonder whether it was really worth it? President Bush, absolutely. What? What? Absolutely. He says, absolutely. I mean, when you turn, and then he catches himself. I mean, when you turn on your TV set every day and see this incredible violence and the havoc that is wreaked as a result of the killers... Oh, it's them. I'm sure why people are getting discouraged, and that's why I spoke to the nation last night and reminded people that this is a... Iraq is a part of this global war on terror. And the reason why foreign fighters are flocking into Iraq is because they want to drive us out of the region. Last estimate I saw, by the way, maybe as many as 1,000 foreign fighters in Iraq. And then Bush... I mean, this is just his stump seat speech. He says, see, these folks represent an ideology that is based on hate... and kind of a narrow vision of mankind. Women don't have rights. Maybe he doesn't realize. He's describing Saudi Arabia, but in Iraq, women actually had rights. Women could drive. Women could participate in civil society. There were women doctors, women teachers. There aren't in Saudi Arabia. And then he tries to tie it into 9/11. He says, and I believe this is an ideological movement, and I know that they want to use suicide bombers and assassins and attacks on the World Trade Center and the attacks in Madrid to try to shake our will and achieve an objective, which is to topple governments. Oh, now we get it. The folks, the insurgents in Iraq are trying to topple the government of the United States or topple the Iraqi government. Yeah, come on, give me a break. They're trying to throw us out and have their country back. 20 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
You know, some things in life are bad. It can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best.
Oh, yeah, this is all you need to do.
And always look on the bright side of life.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You know, it's interesting. There have been several really good studies done recently. I don't have them in front of me right at the moment. I should be, you know, tearing this stuff out and bringing in, sharing with you the science stuff. But they found that this was a study that I believe it was in Science News. I read this in the last month or so, where they were trying to figure out what is it that accounts for long life, for longevity. And they found that a positive, you know, an optimistic viewpoint in life, number one, causes people to live longer. Number two, causes them to be more successful at bringing about change in their environment, in their business, in their world, in their lives, whatever it may be. In other words, those crazy people who believe it's actually possible to do something are the ones who actually do it, even against the odds. So let me just encourage you to join us and be one of those folks. I want to get to Leonard Clark's blog in just a minute. This is something you really need to know about. In fact, you might want to do a little show prep yourself here before I get to sharing some of this with you. Those of you who are listening on the web, go to Leonard Clark, spelled just like it sounds, Leonardclark, LeonardClark.com/blog/. And check out his blog. This is a guy who is really facing a challenge. And I'll share that with you in just a minute. Right now, Paul in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I caught your thing with that John Stauber this morning.
Yeah, John Stauber.
And I have some information. My aunt died in the late 90s of CJD disease in Willows, California.
Oh, really?
And she started getting, like, bad sight. And 3 weeks later, she was gone. They did an autopsy. And it's quite pronounced as that CJD disease.
Also known as Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
Those are the two guys that isolated it in 1948 in New Guinea. Okay,
right.
But anyway, the platelets form a star with a spongiform, like an ice pick hole in the center of it. So you can't mistake that it was Creutzfeldt. So
right.
Anyway, that organism, from what I've read, New England Journal and all those and other things, so that's that it can't be destroyed. They've incinerated it, buried it. They've done everything to it.
Right.
My uncle wanted to give my aunt body to science so maybe they could find out about this stuff, but nobody would pick it up, and after 7 days he had her cremated. They've even incinerated it to 700 degrees, and it still lives. So what happened? They put her ashes in Butts Lake, California. Oh, wonderful.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, that's where she is. So anyway,
well,
so part of the stuff is that they kind of denied it, but right after she died, a lady in Hemet, California, died also on that CJD.
And the question is, how does CJD communicate it among humans?
Yeah, and one of the culprits they think is sheep. There's a disease in sheep called scrapie.
Scrapie, yeah.
Yeah, and in France, there were some scientists gave these kids shots from the pituitary glands of sheep, hormone shots, and all the kids died, 20 of them.
All right, of scrapie, or of CJD.
Yeah, and yeah. So, anyway, it was interesting. I just thought I'd pass that info on to you a little bit, that it does exist, and
yeah.
And I'm not going to, like your man Scott said, I was kind of blaming. I'm just going to give you the information. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
I enjoy your show, and it wakes people up a little bit that don't believe everything you read, and that boondoggle about that cow was okay and all that stuff.
Well, there was an interesting study that I want to say was the University of Pennsylvania. I saw it, it must have been 5 years ago,
yeah.
Where they were doing autopsies on people who were diagnosed with Alzheimer's,
yeah.
And they were actually finding that a substantial number of them, and I don't have the statistics right in front of me, had died of prion disease, apparently CJD,
yeah.
But it could have been mad cow disease. And one of the things is that not only are we not testing cows for mad cow disease,
well, anyway,
we're not testing humans.
Yeah, they're German short hair on the other part, but you said dogs and cats was walking into walls before Bonnie came down with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So she might have been feeding table scraps to her pets.
Yeah, so we all ate together and everything. All of us are alive. And
good. Well, I'm glad you made it through, Paul. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Harbin.
Your skills are more and more often moving into jobs dealing with business strategy.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Tony in Annapolis, Maryland on the line. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi. I was calling in reference to your previous caller who was talking about CJD.
Yes.
And he mentioned sheep and scrapie.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I'm wondering if there's a link and where I can find out more information on that.
Between scrapie and CJD?
Right.
Yeah.
Same thing?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert I'm not an authority on this at all. I've just, read a few things here and there. And John Stauber's book, Mad Cow USA, is a great resource on this stuff. I would recommend that you start with that. He lays out all the science in that book, and he also lays out the politics of it and what's going on with it. My understanding is that what we're talking about here is what's called a prion disease. A prion is a protein that has been folded back on itself. It's a protein that's not in its normal shape. It's not a normal, say, like a strong, like a string or a stick kind of shaped protein, but it's been folded back on itself. And because of this deformation of the protein, this protein has the ability to cause other particular similar proteins. Proteins can be biologically active to cause other proteins to change. I mean, it has the ability to cause the body to react to it, to do things. Well, it's proteins are what, our immune system generates histamines against, for example. An immune response is usually against proteins. And so our body reacts to proteins very aggressively. And this particular protein, they're called prions, P-R-I-O-N-S. And this particular type of protein can actually cause other cells to start manufacturing proteins just like it. So it behaves like a virus. A virus is arguably not a living thing either. These are not living proteins, by the way. These are not living organisms. And arguably a virus is not a living thing because all a virus is a cell membrane surrounding a chunk of DNA. It doesn't consume nutrients. It doesn't excrete waste. It doesn't move. All the things that you normally are associated with life. And so, there's this big debate about whether viruses are living things or not. And yet a virus has the ability to, if it attaches itself to a cell and the viral material gets into the nucleus of the cell, it causes the cell, because of the nature of the DNA in the virus, it causes the cell to convert its own guts, its own contents, into more viruses. And then the cell explodes, and now you've got millions of viruses from one virus. Well, the prions work in a very similar fashion. They cause cells to start producing proteins similar to them, and you end up with mad cow disease, or Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or scrapie. And in cows, it's called mad cow disease. In humans, it's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob, or Creutzfeldt-Jakob, depending on, I believe they were Germans. And in the United States, and in sheep, it's called scrapie. And I think that these are all prion diseases. And I think that they may be all, if not the same thing, very similar to each other. And it was believed for some time that scrapie from sheep could not jump into humans and could not jump into cows. And there's a debate, an argument about whether or not this is what's happened, whether this all started out with scrapie, which has been around for a long time, by the way. It goes back, at least several centuries that we know that sheep have had scrapie. Or not. And like I said, I'm not the guy to ask to give you all the... Now you know everything I know.
Okay, wonderful. Just one more thing. I so love your show. I will not miss it.
Well, thank you,
Tom. I do wish that it were here in Annapolis so I could listen to it while I'm in my car.
Well, we'll work on that.
That would be wonderful.
We're adding affiliates all the time. Tony, thank you so much for the call. It's great to hear from you.
I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. So now Leonard Clark, this guy, here's a guy who has made a stand of conscience. Leonard Clark, on the 4th of July, he's got his own blog, okay? Anybody can, you can create your own blog, right? He created a blog called leonardclark.com/blog. And July 4th, 4th of July, he says, well, happy days are here again. Our great Attorney General Gonzalez flew into the ultra-safe green zone and gave a speech at the embassy. You remember the Attorney General, the one who was chief counsel to the president, said it was quite all right to use certain torture methods that might get by the Geneva Convention, washboarding, beating, etc. It's all there, folks, and our great maniac executive strongly supports him. Now, keep in mind, this is a soldier in Iraq writing this. He says, I'm reading the Stars and Stripes, and I feel so much more comforted when I'm standing up in the turret of my Humvee or driving it because of these very comforting words by our Attorney General. Quote, as we approach the 4th of July weekend, I suspect that there's some of you that are here that sometimes feel lonely, and you sometimes wonder whether you are not alone. And I'm here to tell you that you are not alone, that the American people are very much with you. End quote. Stars and Stripes, July 4th, 05. And then Leonard Skinner says, or Leonard Clark rather, says, oh, I can rest peacefully when the next bomb goes off because the man who approved torture by the United States of America and deeply shamed this nation has told me that I am not alone. Well, he's right about the one thing I know, I'm not alone. Whether it's the spooks or the agents that are monitoring me or my journals or those of you out there who are reading my words, I am certainly not alone. I know that many of those Iraqi people who wish to kill me and my fellow soldiers and are constantly waiting for their opportunity to make sure my fellow soldiers and I are not alone. He says, well, I just wanted to thank the brave Attorney General for flying into the green zone and having to endanger himself because of all this heavy security just so he could tell me that I'm not alone. My heart is truly warmed. He says, now, fellow activists, let us keep up the nonviolent fight against the terrorists and the tyrants at home who are needlessly endangering my fellow soldiers and causing many of them to die needless deaths in this lie we call the occupation of Iraq. We need to let the three-piece suited politicians and their crooked lackeys know that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. Immediately, fellow activists, even if you have to do it on your own, although working through one of the organizations linked to this site might be the best way, find out how your local city, state, and federal politicians stand on the occupation of Iraq. Leonard Clark writes on his blog, if they stand for the lie or are just too afraid to do the right moral thing by standing against this horrible occupation of Iraq, then quickly find somebody who is running against them. If there is nobody running against them, find somebody to run against them. Boycott any companies that are profiting off the blood of my fellow American soldiers. And let us not forget our governors, congressmen, and senators, especially Democratic ones. Ask them or their representatives where they stand on a timetable. And if they will not give you an answer, then by all means find someone who can take their places who will support a timetable. Leonard Clark says, I am damn tired of my Democratic leadership in Washington, D.C. that refuses to publicly call for an immediate timetable for a withdrawal from Iraq. To those Democratic and Republican leaders who have done so, I apologize in advance for the questions you're going to start receiving from your constituents on this issue, but we can no longer sit on the fence. Our American soldiers are dying needless deaths over here, and damn it, you've got to take a stand or we'll vote somebody else in your place. Not one more American soldier should die over here in this lie we call the occupation of Iraq. Written by Leonard Clark, in parentheses, he says, the damn liberal who patrols the mean streets of Iraq every day and kindergarten teacher in the public schools of America, candidate for the U.S. Senate against John Kyle in Arizona. Interesting. And his blog, it's been going on for some time, and he's been talking about this. And now here, Kevin, a friend of Leonard's, who is the site administrator, says, Leonard Clark has been called in and threatened in a way that has not only worried him about a court-martial at this time, he's also fearful of his personal safety. Thus, I will begin to take down this site, per his ranking officer's request. I will post his final voicemail later today. I will continue to keep this site open for those who want to speak out. I will also post stories from vets who have returned from there. I will post stories like that later on today or tomorrow. From now on then, pray for Leonard. This is July 4th, yesterday. Pray for Leonard. Keep him in your thoughts. You will be seeing changes to this site over the next week. This is from the LeonardClark.com/blog site. And then he's got, the voicemails. A message, he was called into his commanding officer's quarters and reprimanded. Remember, he signed up for the National Guard. He's now patrolling the streets of Baghdad. And then here on July 5th, that's today, Leonard Clark posted, thank you all so much for your outpouring of support. And even for those of you who want me dead, just remember this. I am a damn liberal who goes out the wire almost every day in a gunner's turret or driving a Humvee, while many of your friends who call me a traitor sit at home enjoying a democratic America. You will not silence me just as the Nazis did not silence those they tried to slaughter. He says, I will do my best to comply with the absurd rules being used against me, but I can already tell you that I am like the man who is being told that he will get a fair judge, jury, and trial and then be hung tomorrow. It doesn't matter, the military leadership is under pressure to shut me up. I've been told I cannot talk about politics, etc., because they know I would win if I get back home alive, so therefore I believe in my heart that I am not going over the top when I say they will do anything to silence me. And he has anything in all caps. He says, I most of all want to see my beautiful wife and daughter again, along with the beautiful United States of America, but if I need to be sacrificed so that no more American children will go fatherless or motherless, or that a widow will no longer scream in agony over learning of their loved one's death, then so be it. He says, my heart is heavy because I have a daughter who would grow up without a father if I am killed, and a wife without her husband, but I will leave this great matter in the Almighty's hands. Please remember that I will do my best to express my free opinions as an American citizen and let you know about this continued madness, the occupation of Iraq. Please, if they silence me, do not forget my words. If we can save just one more life, then this will have all been worth it, because the cause is just and the reward is the renewal of the human spirit in the face of tyranny. I now consider myself on the verge of becoming a prisoner for my political views and my conscientious views. Not one more soldier. No mas. Si se puede, yes we can. Written by Leonard A. Clark, the damn real liberal who patrols the mean streets of Iraq every day. Title, civilian title, public school kindergarten teacher, population 3%, he says. Or popularity, 3%. And now his most recent posting, this just put up at leonardclark.com/blog. Folks, I've decided to write you this email in response to those who are wondering, in my own views, why I'm apparently violating the rules. Since I don't have much time, here's the gist of it. This is leonardclark.com/blog. I believe American soldiers, my brothers and sisters, are being killed needlessly over here in this lie we call the occupation of Iraq. To me, it is a great offense to the laws of humanity to have American soldiers die needlessly in a place far from their native home when this evil practice could be stopped. When should a person, a human being, if you will, speak out? Well, for me, these fellow soldiers are my loved ones. And if I were ever going to speak out about anything, it would be to save the lives of those I love. To have human beings sacrifice their lives for a lie, a violation of their human rights. And so there you have it. I believe that not only are my human rights being violated, but those of my fellow soldiers as well. To me, that is no different than knowing that people are being murdered and the fellow human being has the supreme moral obligation to prevent these murders from taking place. This is not the action that an unreasonable person would take, but to the contrary, the action of a very reasonable and humane person would take. Leonard Clark goes on to say, I know now in my gut that I have angered and scared very powerful people. Now I know that I will probably pay the price, but I am a human being first, and to me, it is then condoning a war crime than to stand by and let what I am seeing with my own eyes and other soldiers' eyes take place over here in Iraq. I am being threatened for these reasons that I have stated. The evil that is in the minds of men being conquered by the good that is in the hearts. Leonard Clark, soon to be a prisoner of conscience. P.S. If I am cut off with communications with my wife and daughter, please tell my friends to tell them that I will always love them and to trust in God. LeonardClark.com/blog. And if you'd like to know how your elected representatives stand on a timetable to get out of Iraq, you can call them toll-free. Toll-free. Doesn't cost a penny. You can call your elected representatives toll-free at 1-877-SOB-USOB. Yes, 1-877-SOB, the letter U, S-O-B. And you will reach the Capitol Hill switchboard, and you can ask for your member of Congress, or either of, or both, for that matter, of your two senators. You could also ask for the White House, if you'd like to let them know what you think. And if you'd like to, in particular, if you'd like to let them know about LeonardClark.com/blog. And Lenny, hopefully, like-minded members of Congress. LeonardClark.com/blog. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number here. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I trust you had a great weekend. I had read a couple of Leonard's blogs before I went to a pool party yesterday afternoon. I spent probably 30 minutes yesterday morning writing out a note to a young Marine in Iraq. I wanted to pump him up, but I didn't want to stroke him. And none of this freedom crap. He knows he's not over there fighting for freedom. He knows he's over there protecting his buddies.
He knows he was told to go there, and he's doing the best he can in a miserable situation. And I was glad that I had read Leonard's blog before I went to the party yesterday afternoon, because right as we were serving the hamburgers and drinking the beer, somebody got, we need to do a toast for these brave men that are fighting to preserve our freedom. And I kind of just almost, it's kind of like what you're not supposed to do in the swimming pool, but it was just like it was on the whole party. I said, wait a second. And I said, I'm not going to debate with you at all. You've got brave men over there, men and women, doing their job, protecting their buddies, and they were sent over there on a lie, and there is nothing to do with freedom. And I just shut up, and there was a pause, and I don't think anybody talked about the war the rest of the afternoon. It was like nobody wanted to, and I don't know where it went.
You don't know what what seeds you planted.
To do nothing is evil and weak.
Yeah.
And I don't know we evil, but it's weak and it's a. Who was it that said? You know, all it takes
for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
There's not one person in my neighborhood that I would respect as much as that kid over there in Iraq doing his job.
Yeah.
But he is not defending my freedom. He knows he's not defending our freedom. He knows this is a screwed up war.
Yeah. And the reason he's there is so that Bush could get political capital. And that's the tragedy
right.
of it. I mean, that's
well,
the
he's there because he follows orders.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Thanks a lot, Roy. I appreciate it. We're out of time here for this segment. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Harbin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
Yes, democracy is coming, says Leonard Cohen. Let us hope so. Let us hope so, because we could certainly use a little more democracy in the United States of America, and a little less nonsense coming out of Washington, D.C., a little less rhetoric. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Ann, in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I'm calling because last week when there were some more deaths over in Iraq, I thought that I recognized the name of one of the women who was killed. And I read my old local hometown newspaper, the Statesman Journal, out of Salem, Oregon, online every day. And here was the obituary, and it turns out I went to high school with her. Her name is Debbie Klecker, and absolutely had no compelling reason to be over there other than, I guess, that she just wanted to help out because we're old. We're in our 50s. And she had had a very successful career as a deputy sheriff for Marion County for a number of years. And
well, she was probably in the National Guard then.
Salem. Oh yeah. I think it was. No, Marion County is in is around Salem.
Yeah, but I mean, she was in Iraq with the National Guard.
No, she was there. I don't remember the name of the organization, but she was there because she had put in time as a police officer. She was there helping train Iraqi police.
Oh,
officers.
Okay. So she was there as a private contractor.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The second largest army in Iraq.
Right.
Between 20,000 and 80,000, depending on whose numbers you're using.
Correct.
Yeah.
So she was there apparently just out of the kindness of her heart because she had another business she was working on, and I didn't know her well. There were 610 in my graduating class, but I did know her. She was in choir with me, and could say hi to her in the hall. But and it just put a face on it for me. For some reason, my family and I escaped ever even knowing anybody who went to the Vietnam War, and so this is the first time that it has personally affected me, and it just increases my anger.
You really get at the war as hell. I mean, I had friends not come back from Vietnam, and my best friend through high school came back after he was drafted and shot himself in the head. Came home for Christmas, and it's tough. War is hell. I mean,
yes,
that old cliche is absolutely true. And And George Bush had no idea, I think, when he started out that he was sending these kids in to help because he'd never been there himself. He'd avoided it. And thank you for the call.
You bet.
Good to hear from you. And you know, my condolence on you, the loss of somebody that you knew. It's increasingly difficult for Americans to deny what's going on. And therefore, we must get politically active. We must get out there and speak up. Speak out. Write a letter to the editor. Call your local radio and television station. Talk to your friends. Put a magnet on your car. Whatever it is, let the world know that it's time to wake up. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.